Have you ever found yourself judging someone for doing exactly what you've done yourself? Or perhaps you firmly decided not to eat that midnight snack, only to find yourself raiding the refrigerator hours later. If you're human, you've experienced these contradictions. Robert Kurzban's groundbreaking work, Why Everyone Else is a Hypocrite, offers a revolutionary explanation for these inconsistencies. Our minds are not unified entities, but collections of specialized modules that often hold contradictory beliefs simultaneously. The book has become a cornerstone text in evolutionary psychology, praised by Steven Pinker as ingenious and cited in over 2,000 academic papers. Beyond academia, it's influenced fields from business leadership to artificial intelligence design by challenging fundamental assumptions about human rationality. Kurzban's modular theory of mind has even found its way into popular culture, with references appearing in everything from TED Talks to Netflix's The Good Place. Let's explore why this radical rethinking of human psychology has captured so much attention. Imagine your brain not as a unified control center, but as a smartphone running countless specialized applications. Each app performs specific functions without necessarily communicating with others. This is the essence of Kurzban's modular mind theory. The human mind consists of many specialized mental processes, like programming subroutines or apps, each operating by its own logic and designed through natural selection to solve specific problems our ancestors faced. Our behavior depends on which process is running the show at any moment. Because different parts of the mind are designed for different functions, they don't always work harmoniously together. This isn't about rational versus emotional selves or left brain versus right brain. It's about contradictions, how we can simultaneously want contradictory things, like running and staying in bed, or knowing and not knowing our retirement fund status during an economic downturn. Many of these contradictions go unnoticed. Our mental machinery includes different selves designed for specific tasks, many operating outside our awareness. Understanding human behavior requires understanding all these different modules and how they produce our conflicted, inconsistent, and hypocritical nature. Split-brain patients perfectly illustrate this phenomenon. When one hemisphere is shown a chicken claw while the other sees a snowy scene, and then asked to explain why one hand points to a chicken and the other to a snow shovel, the speaking hemisphere invents a plausible but incorrect explanation about cleaning up after chickens. The crucial insight: there's no such thing as the patient, just two disconnected hemispheres with different information. Even normal brains hold contradictory beliefs. Consider color illusions, where squares appear different shades but are identical. Some part of your visual system believes they're different colors, while another part knows they're the same. This contradiction persists even after verification. Your perception doesn't change despite knowing the truth. This demonstrates how different modules in your brain can simultaneously hold contradictory information. Our minds evolved not for accuracy, but for reproductive success in ancestral environments. While organisms can adapt to novel instances of familiar categories, like penguins evading new sea lions or birds avoiding modern vehicles, truly novel environments create significant challenges for adaptations designed for ancestral conditions. Natural selection can't anticipate future threats. It only works with past challenges that affected survival and reproduction. This creates profound mismatches between our evolved preferences and modern environments. For example, our strong attraction to sweet and fatty foods, which served our ancestors well in resource-scarce environments, now leads to obesity and health problems when faced with abundant processed foods and sugary drinks. A fundamental principle of engineering applies to both human-made machines and evolved organisms. Specialization yields efficiency. Specialized machines perform narrow functions more effectively than general-purpose ones. A toaster illustrates this perfectly. Its heating elements, spring-loaded mechanisms, and timing controls make it excellent for toasting bread, but useless for brewing coffee or blending smoothies. Similarly, our brains contain specialized computational mechanisms that embody assumptions about specific problems they evolved to solve, such as face recognition, language processing, and threat detection. The specialized nature of information processing systems explains their remarkable efficiency. Computer scientists break down complex programming tasks into smaller, narrowly defined problems, creating more efficient solutions through modular design. Domain-specific languages like SQL excel at database management, while general-purpose languages like Python can do many things but with less optimization for specific tasks. This principle applies to evolution, too. Natural selection favors specialized adaptations that confer consistent advantages over generations, such as the specialized echolocation system in bats or the infrared sensing organs in pit vipers. Functions can be more or less specialized, involving important trade-offs. Paralympic athlete Oscar Pistorius illustrates this with his specialized prosthetic legs. His carbon fiber running blades provide superior sprinting performance but make everyday walking awkward, while his walking prosthetics aren't optimized for competitive running. Another amputee, Paul Martin, owns 9 different specialized leg sets for various activities, including swimming, cycling, and mountain climbing. Specialization improves performance in one area while compromising others. For brains to handle multiple functions, they must bundle different specialized systems together, like cognitive modules for language, spatial navigation, and social reasoning. A key insight is that any given module might or might not connect to other modules, creating both integration and separation in brain function. This explains phenomena like those in split-brain patients, where severing physical connections between hemispheres leads to confabulation and disconnected awareness between the two sides of the brain. These artificial separations reveal something fundamental about normal brains. Natural separations exist between different mental modules, allowing for both specialized processing and integrated behavior. This modular organization helps explain why we can have unconscious processes operating independently of conscious awareness, and why certain cognitive functions can be selectively impaired while others remain intact. The modular view of the mind fundamentally challenges our deeply held intuition of having a unified, singular self. At Walt Disney World, the attraction Cranium Command depicts a tiny pilot named Buzzy controlling a 12-year-old boy from inside his head, much like how many of us imagine our consciousness works. While this representation is entertaining and intuitively appealing, it fundamentally misrepresents how minds actually function. The problem with positing a brain pilot is that it creates an infinite regress. Who's piloting Buzzy's brain, and who's piloting that pilot's brain? You can't explain a complex brain by positing a smaller brain within it that's equally intelligent. This merely pushes the explanation back one level without solving anything. The modular view provides a more accurate framework for understanding consciousness and our limited access to our own mental processes. Countless modular systems operate without being accessible to consciousness, similar to how we don't consciously know how our visual systems identify letters on a page or how we maintain balance while walking. Evolution doesn't automatically connect modules. Informational encapsulation is actually the default state, and connections between modules only evolve when they provide specific adaptive advantages that enhance functioning. This explains why we can recognize a face instantly but can't describe exactly how we do it, or why we can catch a ball without consciously calculating its trajectory. This modular architecture explains why we're often unaware of how our decisions are made, as demonstrated in numerous experiments where brain activity precedes conscious awareness of decisions by several seconds. In one famous study by Benjamin Libet, participants were asked to spontaneously move their finger while watching a clock-like device. The brain activity indicating the decision to move occurred about 200 milliseconds before participants became consciously aware of their decision. Despite our strong intuitions about having a unified self, there's no special Buzzy or homunculus in charge, just different modules with different functions, only some of which have conscious access. If the brain consists of numerous specialized modules with only some being conscious, it becomes problematic to designate any particular set as the true self. Consider how we can be simultaneously hungry and trying to diet, or feel both love and anger towards someone. These conflicts arise from different modules operating with different priorities. There's no little buzzy-like person making decisions for you, just different brain systems with different functions working in parallel. While some modules control speech and create the compelling feeling of me being in control, there's no particular reason to consider these conscious systems more special or more authentically you than the unconscious modules handling breathing, emotional responses, or threat detection. This understanding challenges our notion of free will and raises profound questions about personal identity and responsibility. The mind contains a sophisticated press secretary module designed to communicate with others in strategic ways. Just as a White House press secretary must carefully manage information flow, selectively emphasize certain facts, and sometimes maintain plausible deniability, our brain's communication modules operate with similar complexity. They frame narratives, spin interpretations, and occasionally remain strategically ignorant of certain information to better perform their social and communicative functions. This press secretary analogy extends beyond simple information management. Like a real press secretary who might genuinely believe their own carefully crafted narratives, our mental modules often create convincing stories that we ourselves buy into. This self-deception can be adaptive, as people who genuinely believe their own explanations tend to be more persuasive to others. When presented with morally challenging scenarios, such as siblings engaging in safe, consensual incest or harmless taboo violations like cleaning a toilet with a national flag, people quickly condemn the behavior but struggle to articulate why, a phenomenon called moral dumbfounding. Even when researchers systematically debunked each proposed justification, example genetic risks in the incest scenario or practical harm in the flag scenario, subjects maintain their moral judgments without coherent reasons. This reveals a fascinating disconnect between the parts of our brain making moral judgments and the communicative parts trying to explain them. The brain's specialized modules store information in different representational formats, similar to how analog and digital devices process the same information differently. A sundial, analog clock, and digital display all track time but use entirely different systems to represent it. Computer files similarly contain information in various formats, GIF, TIFF, BMP, that require specific programs to interpret them. While cognitive scientists debate the exact nature of mental representations, the key insight is that different modules process information in distinct ways, leading to occasional inconsistencies and conflicts within our minds. Our modular brain means different systems take charge in different contexts, like how predator evasion modules instantly activate when we encounter threats. These activations occur based on both external cues, even subtle ones like briefly glimpsing an angry face or detecting a slight movement in peripheral vision, and internal states, such as hunger making food-seeking modules more influential or fatigue amplifying risk-averse modules. This explains numerous everyday phenomena. Why 18-year-old boys seem dominated by mating-related thoughts and behaviors? Why new parents experience previously dormant caregiving modules suddenly taking precedence? Or why normally rational people can become temporarily paralyzed with fear when encountering phobic triggers? The interaction between these modules creates our moment-to-moment experience, with different systems competing for control based on environmental demands and internal priorities. Understanding this modular nature helps explain many seemingly irrational human behaviors and the often contradictory nature of our thoughts and actions. While knowing truth is generally valuable for biological organisms, there are cases where evolved systems can be harmed by gathering accurate information. Though truth is useful for guiding behavior and generating more true beliefs, having only true beliefs isn't always beneficial. As philosopher Patricia Churchland notes, the principal function of nervous systems is to get the body parts where they should be in order that the organism may survive. Truth definitely takes the hindmost. People shouldn't be motivated to discover all possible true information. Some information, though obtainable, simply isn't useful, and time spent gathering it could be better used elsewhere. Barry Schwartz's research shows many people continue gathering information even when it's not worth their time, like being paralyzed by too many shampoo choices. Not having true beliefs can sometimes make you better off. Jason Dana's experiments demonstrate this brilliantly. When given the choice between $5 $5 and $6 $1 options, about two-thirds choose the more generous $5 $5 option. However, when subjects can choose to remain ignorant about whether their selection helps or hurts others, roughly half refuse to learn this information, allowing them to choose the selfish option while honestly claiming ignorance of its effects. Information can create unwanted duties and social obligations. Once others know you possess certain knowledge, you face a reputation cost for not acting on it, like when a bystander points out a cat trapped in a burning building. Research on trolley problems shows people face moral condemnation whether they push one person to save five or don't push. Knowledge creates a no-win situation. Strategic ignorance extends to health decisions like STI testing. Someone who wants multiple sexual partners might avoid getting tested because a positive result would create a moral dilemma. Either abstain from sex or knowingly risk partner's health. By remaining untested, they maintain plausible deniability. They can't be accused of knowingly endangering others. Information can create unwanted duties and social obligations. Once others know you possess certain knowledge, you face a reputation cost for not acting on it, like when a bystander points out a cat trapped in a burning building. Research on trolley problems shows people face moral condemnation whether they push one person to save five or don't push. Knowledge creates a no-win situation. Strategic ignorance extends to health decisions like STI testing. Someone who wants multiple sexual partners might avoid getting tested because a positive result would create a moral dilemma. Either abstain from sex or knowingly risk partner's health. By remaining untested, they maintain plausible deniability. They can't be accused of knowingly endangering others. People systematically overestimate their positive traits and abilities. Studies show that 94% of faculty members rate themselves as above-average teachers, and 68% place themselves in the top quarter. Similar Lake Wobegon effects appear across domains like driving ability and physical attractiveness. These aren't simple delusions. They're strategically wrong representations that confer social advantages through persuasion. Research identified three main areas of positive illusions. People think they have more favorable traits than realistic, believe they have more control than they do, and are overly optimistic about the future. Even Cornell students who rank themselves above average, 61st percentile, in intelligence and other traits, stood by these inflated self-assessments when money was at stake, suggesting these aren't just casual misrepresentations, but deeply held strategic beliefs. We strategically misattribute causality, taking credit for positive outcomes while blaming external factors for negative ones. Laboratory studies consistently show this pattern. When given random feedback on tasks supposedly measuring attributes like intelligence, subjects attribute good results to their own abilities and bad results to external factors, even when experimenters know the outcomes were determined purely by chance. People maintain illusions of control even when outcomes are objectively random. Ellen Langer's classic research showed that people who chose their own lottery tickets demanded significantly higher selling prices, $867, than those who received randomly assigned tickets, $196, despite identical odds of winning. People consistently display unjustifiable optimism, believing good things will happen to them and bad things won't compared to the average person. Israeli soccer fans demonstrate this bias dramatically. When instructed to be objective, only 2% predicted their team would lose before games began. Even when their team was losing badly at halftime, 83% still predicted victory. This optimism serves a social function. Appearing confident about future outcomes makes one appealing as a friend, ally, or mate. Since predictions about the future can't be immediately disproven, strategic optimism is advantageous. Research confirms pessimistic individuals are less socially accepted. The second mystery of the universe, according to economist Steve Landsberg, is why people lock their refrigerator doors at night. The solution comes through understanding modularity rather than the magic eight ball model that assumes people have stable, ordered preferences that determine decisions regardless of context. The notion that people have stable, well-defined preferences falls apart under scrutiny. Context dramatically shapes our apparent preferences. When choosing pens, people selected green when green pens were the majority and orange when orange pens were the majority. Research shows further inconsistencies. People will pay more for one gamble but directly choose another. They'll make different choices depending on whether options are framed as gains or losses. And they'll select different time-delayed rewards depending on how the question is asked. Our brains aren't magic eight balls that integrate all preferences while ignoring context. Instead, different modules drive different preferences. Some modules are designed for immediate gratification, the four F's of feeding, fleeing, fighting, and sex. These impatient modules have high discount rates, valuing immediate rewards over future ones. They're essentially designed as if the world might end tomorrow. Other modules are more far-sighted, causing us to forego immediate pleasures for long-term benefits. Life consists of short-sighted modules battling long-sighted ones. Our brains must reconcile these competing modules with nearly opposite functions. The impatient module that likes cake drives consumption, while the patient module that likes being fit inhibits behaviors with long-term costs. This reconciliation depends on context sensitivity, responding to immediate opportunities, state dependence, accounting for current bodily needs, and history dependence, monitoring reward-effort ratios. Walter Mischel's famous marshmallow experiments from the 1960s showed that four-year-olds who could resist eating a marshmallow to earn a second one later developed into adolescents rated higher on competence, rationality, and stress management. Remarkably, this ability even predicted SAT scores. Children's resistance improved when marshmallows were hidden from view or when they focused on the shape rather than tastiness of the treat. People's moral judgments often lack consistency because they don't derive from coherent principles. While we might apply principles like freedom unless harm to activities we enjoy, like sex, our moral condemnation of others often stems from intuitive reactions we can't properly explain. My research shows people make moral judgments first, then search for victims and justifications afterward. In studies of victimless offenses like urinating on tombstones or human cloning, people who judged acts wrong almost always identified victims, even when scenarios were modified to eliminate obvious victims. This pattern strongly suggests moral judgments aren't driven by coherent principles, but by intuitions. Both sides of the abortion debate reveal inconsistencies. Pro-life advocates claim abortion violates a fundamental right to life which cannot be infringed, yet many make exceptions for rape and incest, contradicting their core principle. Meanwhile, Democrats base their position on privacy rather than offering a moral foundation. Most revealing is that pro-life advocates rarely advocate criminal penalties for women who have abortions. If abortion truly equals murder, why not treat it as such legally? Humans demonstrate a peculiar tendency to care intensely about others' behaviors that don't directly affect them. While most organisms in nature only monitor others when their fates are intertwined, we invest significant energy policing others' actions. When people use drugs, speak certain words, or attempt to sell body parts, we not only care but demand punishment. This represents a biological mystery that remains unsolved. Modularity explains hypocrisy. Our moral modules condemn behaviors in others that our self-interest modules encourage in ourselves. This contradiction stems from evolutionary competition. Morality evolved as a system where people accept constraints on their behavior only if those rules apply equally to everyone else. Impartiality is essential. Hypocrisy violates this principle by applying rules inconsistently. Our outrage at hypocrisy protects us from others using moral rules to their advantage while exempting themselves. We're better at spotting others' inconsistencies than our own, which explains why politicians seem especially hypocritical. They make public moral claims and face greater temptations and scrutiny than ordinary people. For most of us, hypocrisy persists because our modules aren't designed to notice our own inconsistencies, strategic ignorance that serves our interests. America's foundational commitment to liberty is celebrated in the Declaration of Independence, the Pledge of Allegiance, and the National Anthem. These documents and symbols consistently emphasize freedom as a core American value, with phrases like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and with liberty and justice for all, deeply embedded in our national consciousness. However, our brains contain profound contradictions. While our press secretary modules loudly broadcast that we favor liberty, many other modules simultaneously work to restrict others' freedoms through social pressure, conformity demands, and moral judgments. Our moral psychology remains largely unexplained by science, but research has revealed that these mental systems operate as separate modules, creating internal inconsistency between competing drives. The modules that champion personal freedom often clash with those focused on group cohesion, traditional values, and social order. For example, someone might strongly advocate for free speech while simultaneously supporting censorship of views they find offensive, or champion religious freedom while seeking to restrict religions different from their own. These contradictions emerge from different mental modules processing moral questions through distinct frameworks. While hypocrisy appears to be our natural state, it makes for problematic and often harmful policy. Moral consistency matters deeply, as inconsistent moral rules not only compromise our principles, but can enable systematic oppression. When we apply different standards to different groups or situations, we create loopholes that can be exploited to deny rights while maintaining a facade of principled behavior. Historical examples abound, from religious persecution to racial discrimination, where people proclaimed liberty while denying it to others. The modular nature of our minds presents both challenges and opportunities. Though achieving perfect consistency between our various mental modules may be impossible, awareness of these internal conflicts gives us the ability to consciously intervene. We can work to change the balance of power between competing modules and reduce the gap between our professed principles and our actions. This might involve developing better self-awareness, actively questioning our contradictory impulses, and working to align our behavior more closely with our stated values. Understanding the modular nature of our minds doesn't excuse hypocrisy. Rather, it explains its prevalence and offers a practical path toward greater consistency. By recognizing when different modules are in conflict, we can make more conscious choices about which impulses to follow. This awareness allows us to build institutional safeguards against hypocrisy and develop personal practices that help align our actions more closely with our highest principles. The goal isn't to eliminate our modular nature, but to work with it more effectively in service of our declared values.